All the songs you love, right here on Nova 103.5. Your life, your music. Gary Struble on The Business Report.
Welcome back to The Business Report. You're on Nova 103.5. Time now for the lead story, and the lead story is proudly brought to you by Alex Forbes. Alex Forbes, let us help you secure your financial well-being now and in the future. And the lead story this evening is we're privileged to have in the studio with us tonight Dr. Frans Grenier. Frans, welcome to the show. Welcome to
Namibia.
Thank
you very much. It's great to be here.
Just give us a little bit of background, just to provide a little bit of background for listeners out there who might not know your pedigree. For nearly two decades, you were at the Institute for Race Relations in South Africa and for a long time as CEO. Just tell us a little bit about the IRR. We hear murmurings from time to time, but what does an institute like the Institute for Race Relations do actually? What do you do?
It was a policy research group, a think tank in the classical sense of things, approaching its centenary now. So we're very confident, the oldest such organization in Africa. A long history of seeking to advise people who would make decisions that would have a very great influence on the future of that country, a proud history predating 1948 even, very prominent in the anti-apartheid struggle in South Africa. And after that, I think, pulled off the important thing of being able to reinvent itself as remaining relevant in a democratic South Africa. Influential, I think, in some of the early successes of that young democracy. You know, South Africa now has some problems, but its first 15 years were pretty good. And an organization that I left about a year ago, it's in the hands of a fantastic management team and amazing people. I'm sure it will go from strength to strength. And facing the quite daunting challenge of using its skills and expertise built up over decades to advise current South African policymakers on finding a route back to the early prosperity that we enjoyed in the decade, almost 15 years perhaps, after our democratic transition.
Okay, so let's break it down a little bit for our listeners. A think tank, my understanding, is a group of differently abled people who spend their time doing research of different sorts and consulting of different sorts to arrive at points of departure for burning issues that then can be called upon by corporates, by government, by other centers of policy to contribute to the discussion.
Is that a great question? You know, I've very seldom had it over so many years. What it is simple. Decisions have to be taken about how countries are run. And influential organizations, perhaps in business or politics or government or foreign governments, are able to take those decisions. Often, they have their own interests in mind. And these might be very, very positive interests. They might be good for the society in question. But there's also a role for independent advisors that aren't themselves deeply invested in business or aren't themselves deeply invested in an election result, to act in a sense as a sounding board, critics often, to challenge business leaders, to say, if you think this through, is it actually going to work in the long term? To challenge government leaders and political parties to say, have you considered the implications of your decisions? Why don't you rather do this? So think tanks assemble numbers of usually very bright analysts and thinkers to understand how a society is evolving and consider ideas and policies that might allow it to do better, and then to communicate those, lend them to become a support structure for leaders in business and politics and government to consider that advice if they choose to do so. So that's the perhaps the classical role of a think tank, and it pretty closely approximates what the IRR has done in South Africa over, you know, several decades.
So in your time at that institute, you would have had engagements with the ANC under Mbeki's leadership, under Jacob Zuma's leadership, and under Cyril Ramaphosa's leadership. I guess the question I ask is, has the South African government not been listening, or have they been listening and ignoring, or have they been listening and just getting execution wrong?
Yeah, no, not listening terribly well, I think. Remember, think tanks, and this is something I pressed in the IRR, is we've been elected by nobody. We are simply outside advisors. It is not on our shoulders the responsibility for what happens in a society. We put our views across. Government leaders or business leaders are free to accept them or reject them. The consequences, which we might get to in this conversation, are on those individuals. They have to explain to their shareholders the returns in the economy. Government officials have to explain to voters why the unemployment rate is rising or falling. I think there are think tank organizations, civil society groups that sometimes are tempted to overstep the mark and to try and govern through the courts, for example, which has a place. It's not in principle the wrong approach. But we tried very much to be only the advisor, not to cross a line into assuming responsibility for the decisions that people took. And no, quite obviously, I think had some of the advice we provided been considered, the country to been considered to a greater extent than it was, the country would have been in a much better position. There's another side to that coin, though, in that sometimes I face the question of what is the point of groups such as yours? Look at the place, unemployment's very high, growth, etc. And our answer was, well, what you don't see is the many interventions that were made that prevented a series of other, also net negative policies being adopted. That this, where we face our, whatever we face at a moment in time, is not rock bottom. There were many interventions made that ensured that policymakers did not take additional poor decisions. And there were examples of policymakers taking some fairly positive decisions as well. We weren't a group, I think, I think you're very successful, or you can be, in the think tank world if you don't care who takes the credit and you're not concerned about what the critics sling your way. And the IRR, I think, again, throughout its history, was quite comfortable in both. It didn't claim any easy victories, and it wasn't too perturbed if the critics unloaded on it.
Okay. You left about a year ago. You've set up your own shop. I've been on the site. It's a very cool profile pic. You've got your cards out, deep thinking mode. And you're in country. And I spent a little bit of time setting it up because clearly that's your area of expertise is thinking deeply on important topics and giving it advice. So what are you doing here in NAM?
Yeah, I've got my own outfit now. We do a similar thing. We provide advice to anyone who's interested here and around the world. So I'm in Southern Africa and around the world. Specifically here, about 3 years ago, we were brought into a project to help the Economic Association of Namibia start to think about Namibia's future. And we did that on the dawn of the COVID pandemic and produced a very interesting document that asked the question of whether really a decade ahead, Namibia would be a country in which 90% of its economically active population would be in jobs. And that's a great question because it seems a little narrow question, but it's actually very broad. If that's true, it means you're a very prosperous country. It means you're probably a very stable society. It means you're a country in which the relationships between people might be very good because you're seeing this rise in standards of living. So we started that exercise and then COVID hit, and we were never really entirely able to complete it in its entirety, certainly not to present its results. And last night, in fact, we were able to do some of that. And it was really interesting because I mean, I'd obviously worked a little bit on it here, and then I'd been away for 2.5 years in this amazing sort of COVID world that we all lived in. And I looked at some of the results of that study that was done by the EAN guys, supported by Cirrus, your consulting advisory group here. They're amazing chaps. And I was able to say to some of our colleagues who'd worked on it, you guys don't have to change anything. The calls you were making, the assessment you had of where Namibia might be headed in the long term has aged very well, even through the COVID pandemic. So that was nice. Last night we could talk a little bit about that. And then And then beyond that, you know, Namibia has had a very interesting thing that's happened to you, in that you appear to have found a lot of oil.
We found oil.
Now, I'll tell you something that is more significant than oil. On my way here for the week, some of my clients sort of said to me, where are you next week? I said, I'm going to Namibia. A year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, they would have said, oh, have a nice time.
Mm.
They said, that is very interesting. What is going on there? Now, that's a new question.
That is. Things have changed quickly in 6 months.
Next week, I'll be in America. And I'm fairly certain if I sit down in Washington and chat to a few people, one of the lines I'm quite looking forward to using is to say, I've just spent a week in Namibia.
And see what
because the Washington said are going to say, really?
Tell us about
what is going on there. This is much more important than oil. Oil in and of itself,
yeah.
We can talk about. We might get involved here a little bit, perhaps with the Cirrus guys and thinking through your oil options now. But what's happening is Namibia is starting to become an issue, something to take seriously. And that is an opportunity for this country, which is absolutely immense.
So later in the show, the listeners can stay tuned. We're talking to the MD of NAMCOR, who we interviewed earlier. And he said an interesting thing. He said that their model shows the GDP of Namibia will double by 2040. And this is, of course, not just off the back of oil, which is significant. It's two of the top 20 finds of all time. But green hydrogen is an entirely new bubbling industry. We've had the privilege of talking to some of the guys involved in that and just understanding the sheer scope of what could be happening. And then, of course, we have the Standard Solar, which has been around for a long time but is now seriously gaining traction. And there's been some rumors of big gas up north. And suddenly Namibia, given its size, relatively small population, has the opportunity to almost be an African Dubai to some extent, because a little bit here will make a difference. But this seems to be suddenly the possibility of becoming an energy hub for Africa.
Yeah, quite. Yesterday in a meeting, actually, someone raised the point of whether Namibia could be an OPEC member. And I just thought, wow. I mean, this is a conversation that shows how much has changed. There are two sides to this oil thing, though. Be cautious around it, too.
But this is what I want to say. So Nigeria and Angola had much the same experience, right?
Your oil is 300 kilometers out to sea. It is very, very deep. There are very few firms in the world that can get it out and that can pump that oil. There is a dangerous temptation when you find a resource such as this to think that you are now rich.
Mm.
There's still not a drop of oil that's been pumped. We're not entirely sure how much there is. That must still be established. What if there are other oil finds in the region? What if there are major breakthroughs in the storage of solar and wind power, which change the equation on energy demand around the world completely? These are all important questions. The risk I think Namibia faces in its oil is that its government thinks it can start to spend more aggressively or slow down on other critical reforms here, because you've got something on the horizon that's going to be so lucrative that you don't need to worry about the other important stuff. And I've got a sort of feeling as we early days starting to think about the oil options for Namibia, that oil is as a best case going to be a resource that can help to finance the diversification of Namibia's economy. That requires exceptionally shrewd decision making within government and business still. So you've got this risk now that there's an idea that perhaps you're rich, but you're not.
Not yet.
Stuff's deep under the water and very far away, and a lot in the world can change. You're on the tail end of hydrocarbons. You've still got to see how Western demand for hydrocarbons and hydrocarbon politics plays out against green movements, etc. So there's a lot to be cautious of, a vast amount to be cautious of. If you're well cautious of that, the potential inside this is immense. And your potential beyond it is immense, too. I've visited Namibia and left with the feeling that I don't know to what extent Namibian decision makers understand how important and influential in the world you could be. You are a dominant piece of the Atlantic coastline. Park a battleship off Africa's Atlantic coast. The next stop is New York. That is a big thing. The Indian Ocean Rim on the other side of the continent is a hotbed of contestation between world powers. Who commands the southern sea route across the Cape is geostrategically as important as at any point since ships sailed around the world, since the spice trade. Your positioning here on the Atlantic coast makes you very, very influential with regards to that. You do not face internal extremism. You do not face the same problems as might be found in Mozambique, for example. Mm. This is a huge plus. Your infrastructure is basically good. Your democratic infrastructure, your systems of government and so on, chiefly sound, particularly when you go and compare to many other resource-producing regions of the world. The contestation between great powers, West and East, there's in a sense, have a sort of watershed on the African continent. You can be an immensely influential player in that as well. And on top of that, you now have oil. And finally, your South African neighbor is going through a hard time. And there's potential in that for you as well to play a more leading role in this region. I once had a conversation with a politician here, and I said, you know, you should take advantage of South Africa's difficult circumstances. And this chap felt that might not be the right thing to do because it would be unfair to South Africa to kick it while it's down. And I said, absolutely not. There's nothing that could inspire reform in South Africa faster than the sense that Namibia is starting to take a little lead here and there in the Southern Africa story and Southern Africa dominance. So, you know, I could easily get carried away almost and say that Namibia is extremely well positioned globally if it now plays its cards correctly.
This next 5-year period being critical in the transition towards whatever's coming.
Yeah.
Franz, thank you so much for popping into the studio this evening. Always lovely to hear from
you
and
much.
Good luck with the work. And we hope that our Namibian government, which we've heard occasionally does, that they listen. Thank you very much. That's this evening's lead story. Dr. Franz Grenier joining us here in studio. And the lead story proudly brought to you by Alex Forbes. Alex Forbes, let us help you secure your financial well-being now and in the future.
If you missed the Business Report live, but don't want to miss out on some of the most up-to-date economic, financial, business news, and so much more, you can catch up wherever it suits you by visiting the podcast page on nova.com.na.